Broadcast. Make left traffic. Clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie. Charlie, 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range. 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Albert Delta, 3321, Mike, and downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 27 of the In the Pattern Podcast. We are back again after some extended break. We continue to have issues about catching up to do this more regularly. Somehow we are going to find a way to do that. I'm not sure how it is, but we're going to make it happen. Anyways, this is Chris back at you again with the rest of the crew. I got John Conway out on the East Coast. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Glad to get back with you guys. How about Mark on the East Coast? You're here with us again?
Well, yeah, but I'm on the West Coast.
Oh, the West Coast. I thought that's what I said. Man, I am getting more dyslexic with my old age.
So what are you drinking tonight?
Speaking of that, there you go. There's a fat tire. And in the northern central part of the United States, Mr. Brad Kane. What's up, buddy?
Oh, it's balmy weather outside, and just thought I'd come online and chat with my friends.
Well, thank you for joining. We are glad to get this thing started. It's been a while. Last time we got together was in November. Here it is, January again. I'm going to do everything possible I can to get at least two out of the three of us on some sort of semi-consistent basis. Every 2-3 weeks would be great.
We've rescheduled this how many times?
No, we've literally been trying since, I know, the beginning of December, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, and the holidays were tough, and then after that, I don't know, we've scheduled this another three times after that, yep. And we were almost online, and then...
Yeah, no, like, we wanted to do this before Christmas, I'm sure of that, right?
Yeah, because I sent out the one that's good for that, and then Brad sent out another one, and you sent out one, I don't know, we've tried.
It's not for a lack of effort, I promise. Anyways, let's get down to this and knock this one out. It's been... you know, this is prime Arizona flying weather out here. This is when it's best, except for, you know, we've had some weird freeze days. Actually burnt my my trees. Normally our trees out front stay green year round. They're ficus trees, and they pretty much stay green all year. But they got burnt, toasted up. All the pretty much ground shrubs and whatnot got hosed up. So we did get like 3 or 4 days where the nights at least – was below freezing, which is kind of odd for us. Of course, no snow, and that's fine. But and then we got some rain the other day. But other than that, you know, it's been 60s and even 70s. I can't complain, and it's been great flying weather. How say you, fellas?
We've had a couple of days where it's gotten...
Well, I have the same thing in California, which has been good.
Got stepped on a little bit.
Go ahead, Brett.
We've had 1 or 2 days where it's been below freezing. I mean, below zero Fahrenheit.
That's quite a bit below freezing.
MLK Day, wanted to fly down to Chicago and wasn't able to because it never got above, I think, -6 was the high.
And that was on the ground?
On the ground. Our club has a rule that if you take off and it's below zero and you don't have a special dispensation, you are kind of on your own in terms of if the engine goes, you're going to have to pay for it. Somebody took off in the aero and the rebreather line froze up and pumped all the oil out of the engine. And they had to make an emergency gear up landing in a field when the engine froze. That was a $20,000 tab for the club to absorb. And they said, yeah, let's not do that anymore.
So from now on, it's if you break it, you buy it. If it's in the below zero range.
Below zero Fahrenheit, right.
Yeah. And that's just as far as ground. That's not, you know, at altitude.
Correct.
Well, okay. Because I mean, you can get up to 20, 30 below up there, right?
If it's 2 degrees on the ground, it's going to be minus a lot by the time you get up to altitude.
Negative a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And Mark, we get a lot of the same weather, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been, what do they call it?
terminal clear, severe clear.
Severe clear.
Severe clear here, and which is great because I'm finally healthy again, and I can fly as much as I can get my hands on the airplane, which has been excellent.
Yeah.
So.
And, John, you're not under 3 feet of snow for a change? For a winter?
We didn't get any snow last year. We got nothing.
No, last year?
Last year? No, that was a year before.
Oh,
last year we got absolutely nothing. This year we've already gotten a couple dustings, you know, 1-2 inches type of thing. Nothing major, but you'd think it's the end of the world the way that everyone here drives. Hey, pretty bad.
Hey, that's the way it is here when it rains. We get like it rains 4 times in January and about 7 times in July. Well, the problem is that the oil build up on the roads, and then you add a little bit of water and it's an ice rink. So
yeah,
people can't figure out how to drive out here in the rain. So
yeah, clearly not, because now the front of my car is a little bent up.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Some lady, it was wet roads. It wasn't even raining. It was just slightly wet roads. And somehow she ends up sliding directly into my lane. And I'm like, there's a car facing my way in a 2-lane road in my lane. Something's not right here.
A head on?
Pretty much. She was stopped. I was almost stopped by the time I got the brakes on for long enough to then up the front end a little bit. So that's been kind of my day.
It didn't fold up the hood at all, did it?
No, actually, I didn't hit the hood. It's just the fender's all bent up, and I need a new headlight. But other than that, it's not too bad.
And it didn't deploy the airbags, it sounds like.
No, thankfully.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been a bad day. It was already a bad day. That would have made it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody here really knows how to deal with the rain or the snow. But overall, the weather here has been rather cold for us, which is teens, 20s type of thing. It actually warmed up with this front coming through, man. It was 70 today.
I heard about that in the East Coast. They're getting seriously teased.
It's been 30s, 20s. I mean, it's been cold out. And then yesterday was like, you know, low 50s, which, okay, you know, that happens in January once in a while. But then today, literally 70 degrees. I'm outside in T-shirts. Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then we just got dumped on with rain as the front moved through earlier this evening. So it's been very rainy and disgusting.
But, yeah, that was a big one. I was watching that one moving across. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I was opening up 4Flight to check out kind of the new interface they have on the iPhone, looking at the weather. So it was a nasty looking front. And I tell you what, those clouds were booking it today. You just look up and probably, I don't know, 1,000 foot. Just booking it. I was like, man, it's a day I could fly backwards.
Let's practice slow flight.
Yeah. So enough about the weather. Let's talk about flying.
Enough about the weather. Other than the weather, you've got some other things keeping you occupied recently. How's the wedding situation coming along?
Hey, this isn't about this isn't flying related.
No. Not yet. Not yet.
No. The wedding planning's going good. I'm getting married in 6 weeks now. So
6 weeks.
Excited about it. Yeah, you know, I mean, we have the, you know, verbal acknowledgement that she gets a Volvo and I get an airplane eventually. So, you know, we're good. And she lets me get an Oshkosh. So, hey,
that sounds like a good trade.
It's a win-win.
That's a good woman right there. What's honeymoon plans?
Yeah, Cancun.
Cancun. There you go.
Yeah, we got I take it back. We're flying into Cancun. That's why I'm thinking Cancun. We're actually going to Cozumel.
Okay.
Got a really good deal on a... Actually, it's kind of a private suite loft thing with our own pool thing. It's kind of cool.
Nice.
Ocean view. So we got a really good deal on that. Flying AirTran down there.
Nice.
Should be fun. Get some miles. So it's good.
Speaking of getting some miles, Mark, you've been getting some miles on lately. Or I should say some hours.
Some hours, exactly. Yeah, it's been nice to actually get up and... I don't know, actually, in the last episode, what I had done. I think I was talking about the cross countries and stuff. And but
not
since then,
the airports.
What's that?
Yeah, not being able to find airports.
Oh yeah,
is that what it was? Yeah, maybe that's what it was. But since then, I've done. I'm doing check ride prep right now, so. I have a ton of studying to do. Getting ready for the oral portion. I met with my instructor today. We just did a bunch of groundwork going over everything. He says I'm all I got to do is go out a couple more times and do some practice for all the maneuvers.
walking through all the steps, you know, get used to verbalizing. I'm not a verbal person in the cockpit, and that's something I'm really trying to change. So say than do, and you know, all that stuff you should get used to doing. But yeah, I have I'm basically scheduled. I got about 2 more hours and then of practice time, and then he wants to send me up with the DPE, just kind of a pre-check or the final phase check.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's kind of common out here with the school. I didn't know that, but the DPE has a really good relationship with the school. So what we'll do is, I'm not sure which one I'm going up with, but he'll take me up for basically my final stage check, and tell me where I need to practice more on, or say, hey, you know what? I think you're good. Let's schedule the whole final thing. So
will that be the same DPE that you actually do the test with?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My instructor says that he's been doing that for a long time, and it works out really well because it allows you to get to know the DPE and not go in there thinking that it's this big bad person. You get to know that person, and then you know you can sit and talk and be comfortable and do the oral portion comfortably and then actually be in the plane like it's I've already flown with Joe, so we're just gonna go out and I'm gonna be a private pilot and we're gonna go out and do some stuff.
I think that's
good.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
So
just get rid of some of the nerves,
and that's what I'm really hoping. Being prior military, I have a thing about respecting authority, and the one thing that I think we talked about this in previous episodes, but
yeah, we did.
I have a problem because this guy's he's an FAA examiner, and if he's going to talk, I'm going to listen instead of during a critical phase saying nope, stop, I've got to do the pilot thing here right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I'm going to have to be able to overcome, and I've done it with my instructor a couple times, and he goes, okay, Roger that.
Yeah.
We're in this phase. That's good. He goes, you did well on that. And I'm like, oh, it didn't come across rude as in zip,
No, that's a good point, because part of their job in that test is going to be to just try to distract you a little bit.
Right. So. And so that's part of what I've, what we're getting ready to do.
Stop talking. I didn't say stop it. I just kind of ignored him, did my thing, and just stopped talking. I was like, I'm focusing on this now. I can't deal with you. I'm just didn't say anything.
Yeah, that was more my thing, too. I did what I had to do. I'm like, sorry, I'm busy trying to pass my check ride. I'll chat with you later.
And you know what? One of the things that my instructor told me today was you have to – basically, when you do your pre-flight brief – let him know that, hey, we have. I need to have a sterile environment during critical phases, takeoff, landing. If at some point in time I put my hand up because I need to talk to ATC, I need you to not speak. And he goes, most of the DPEs that are here will respect that and go, okay, he's just laid down ground rules for me riding with him. He's pilot in command, and which I thought was really kind of a cool concept.
I do actually I do that when I fly with people who haven't flown with me before. I'll be like, hey, during these times, keep it quiet so I can do what I need to do and not kill either of us.
Cool. So that's where I'm at right now is I went and purchased the ASA oral prep study guide. Mm-hmm. and the brand new 2013 FARAM. That I'm going to have to go through and re-highlight everything that I need to know. And, some of the basic stuff that I thought I knew because I haven't looked at it in a couple of months, what is that? What does that symbol mean? Or, we're looking at the simple stuff on the chart. What is a repeater, this little repeater thing up here? Well, how does that work? And, when you're talking to flight service, and I was like, crap. I knew this 2 months ago and I forgot it now because I haven't had to deal with it. I haven't worked with it at all.
You mean the so. R above the VOR box? The frequency with an R on it above the VOR?
On some of those, but I've got on my chart, there's actually up in the foothills, there's actually a repeater station. And it's labeled, and he goes, do you know what this is? It's RCO something, and he goes, do you know what this is, and do you know how it works? And he says, this is the kind of stuff that the examiner's going to ask you, and he's going to hammer you. And if he finds that you're weak in that, he's going to go dig deeper.
Oh, is that where you're talking to like flight service, and you transmit on something, receive on another?
Correct. You'll receive through the VOR most of the time.
But you're going to transmit through and that's the basic thing. But he wanted to make sure that when I saw this repeater station out there, he goes, you know, when you're at 3,000 feet, your antenna is 3,000 feet tall. So you're going to actually be able to transmit to flight service, which is, you know, 30 miles away. Mm-hmm. They're going to respond to you through a landline that goes to the repeater and then pops up to you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. But, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't.
When you think of it that way, yeah.
Exactly, and it was something that I had talked to a previous instructor a year ago about, and I completely forgot that that's how the system works. So, but it was just little things like that. I was like, and then, you know, pulling up a METAR and a TAF, I knew what it said, but there's like one or two little letter abbreviations that you don't see very often. He goes, well, what does that mean? Crap. He goes, you're going to need to know this, you know? So
yeah, I don't know about having to know like all the different abbreviations on that METAR and TAF. That, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I think would be standard, but there is so much obscure stuff that doesn't come up a lot.
Right.
Well, it's so much to know on that piece alone.
Well, there was one today that I hadn't seen in a while, and it just happens to be it's this time of the year when you get mist or light fog.
Mm.
BR. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw BR, and I was like,
Baby rain.
Baby rain, and that's exactly what he said.
Oh, that's a good one.
Does somebody watch the King Schools video?
I have no idea what that is.
He referred to that. He goes, that's from John and Martha. I was like, oh, I didn't watch those. Yep.
See?
When we get around here this time of year, near this time of year anyways, the acronym is Foxtrot Zulu Foxtrot Golf. Nobody. No, it's freezing fog.
Fog. I get EH.
I missed a letter there.
We get EH, extreme heat.
We don't see that one.
Yeah.
That's just density altitude going berserk.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I don't think EH is something real. I'm just...
No, but you had that sandstorm. What was that thing?
The haboob. Haboob.
Yeah, the haboob.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near an airplane, even standing next to one when one of those comes through.
Yeah.
Is that a SIGMET then? Haboob?
Well, I'll tell you what. Next time one comes around, I will definitely look it up. I've never...
You have a METAR.
I think that would fall under a convective, because that's like one of those big...
Well, because the winds are 50, 60 miles an hour, and those things are in the neighborhood of, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 feet tall and 20 to 50 miles wide when they come through. So, I say that fits convective.
Is it convective?
I don't. It would seem like it.
If it's only 3,000 feet tall, I mean, a thunderstorm is 50 to 60.
Yeah, but it's very
violent. Is this something that you're going to fly through, or you expect Southwest to fly through?
No, that's what I mean. It's a SIGMET, but a convective is a thunderstorm.
Didn't convective have certain winds related to it that were consistent over a given period of time? It's been a little while since I've seen it, but I remember there being something that differentiated it from a that was different, that wasn't just convective currents. But it's been a while. Mark, you're the one that's about to do this.
Yeah.
And therein lies the study problem. Because this is some of the stuff that we went over today, and I was like, I haven't had to deal with weather in 6 months.
Get the King videos. Watch the Oral.
I've got the Sporties one, but it's a couple of years old, so the videos are kind of old. And then it turns out that I'm missing like 3 DVDs that I lent to somebody. And so, I mean, I've got plenty of resources that I can go through. Yeah. But now's the time for the next week. That's all I'm going to do is, you know, when I'm not working, I got to study so I can be comfortable.
Every night. You'll get it.
Yeah. I remember you going through this, so you studied like every night, and we were trying to help you work through stuff. And
yeah, I mean, I spent probably 2 weeks. That's all I did every night was study, and between that and then the mock oral that he gave me, it really, you know, it was good. And having who do we have? CFI Stu? Yeah.
CFI's Stu.
Yeah, but we only had one on. Although, yes, that gets confusing now that they're both CFIs.
The next time one of those things comes through, I have to try and save the METAR and look up.
I remember you posted
like that. Yeah, I remember doing that too. I don't remember what any of the special codes were. I was just impressed with the wind and stuff like that. But I'll have to look at it more in depth. But Mark, man, it seems like you've really since you got back in the plane, man. You've been hustling.
I have. We've done so much work in the last – I think I've – since the last time we've talked, I probably have flown I don't have my logbook here, but it's a solid 10 hours of flying since we last talked. So
what's been your favorite thing since you've started back up?
Well, flying, period. But I mean, the stuff that we've worked on, the one that I was the most nervous about, try to change the subject, I was the most nervous about was doing the diversion. Mm. And that was one of our things. I made the flight plan to go from Auburn to Stockton or Fresno or something like that. So I did that whole flight plan. I went through, and that was not a problem, you know, looking up the weather and like everything you're going to do for a flight plan. And then we get about halfway between the second and third checkpoint, and he goes, okay, I'm having a medical condition, and we're at 5,500 feet. Now I have a medical condition. Get me down to an airport. And you have to think, okay, I've got 8 airports around me. Not a problem. Which one's got medical care? Which one is close to a hospital? Da, 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 da. And we stopped and talked about it. And he goes, well, from my experience, because he's a retired firefighter, he goes, well, you could land here because there's a fire station on the right on the field, and they have, you know, EMTs in that firehouse. I wouldn't know that.
But that's what ATC is for.
Exactly. And after we had our conversation, he goes, if you ever have that doubt, you call them and say, you know, vector me to the nearest that I could get, you know, medical attention. I have a person on board having a heart attack or in trouble breathing or whatever. And he says, they'll tell you where to go. He goes, but for your own general knowledge, you know, he goes, the former Air Force base right there has a hospital on base or on the grounds. He goes, and we're 6 miles away. He goes, you could haul ass to that one and we could have an ambulance waiting. And he goes, he says, so this is the kind of stuff that you need to know. That kind of flustered me a little bit, but you just deal with it. And I think in the real world, I would probably be maybe a little bit more prepared, I like to think, but I don't know. He still kind of keeps me on edge.
I remember my oral section. When I went to go do that, was I think we were there together for like over 3 hours. I don't know what it was like for you guys, but I was like, is this thing ever going to end?
Your oral was 3 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was two. One hour of that was going over
the books,
all of the logs, all the books, mm-hmm. What was going to happen that day, getting to know him a little bit. So really, my oral was only like an hour.
Yeah, I think I was stumbling too much and not being real clear of my answers, so you know, it just kind of drug things out, and it seemed like we were going over the log books and you know, all the documentation that goes along with the plane for a long time, and then the whole flight planning procedure of kind of flight planning, you know, the next day's flight, you know, because they give you, okay, here's your flight plan, and then you got to bring it into your DPE and explain to them, you know, how you came up with all your decisions and whatnot.
Yeah, mine was about an hour of logs and whatnot, and then 2 hours of oral. But a lot of that was because I knew sort of the rote answer, but I had a question about why is it that they do it that way? And so then he would tell me, you know, oh, it's because of this weird thing that you wouldn't be expected to know for a private pilot's certificate.
So you just did that to yourself.
Right. And I will say it was really pleasant. I mean, he's a great guy. He's since retired, but he's a great DPE and he knew a ton of stuff. He was very patient. He was a good teacher and he wanted to make sure that you were ready to go fly, you know, after you passed. So yeah. He was perfectly willing to dispense information and I was in a good place to receive it. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, I think you'll find you'll find that most of them are. I mean, mine, it was the same way. I mean, I learned so much from him on that flight. And I was reading or listening to something somewhere. I forget where I heard it, but they were talking about the fact that, you know, DPEs are instructors. And they're not supposed to instruct, but they kind of can't turn it off.
Yeah, there's no chance you don't walk away learning something.
I mean, I learned more, you know, it was probably, I mean, I keep saying this, but probably 10 minutes in, maybe 20, I kind of forgot that I was on a check ride and just, it felt like another training flight to me.
Yeah. I learned more about VOR navigation and like creeping up on the radial that you want to be on during that check ride than I ever did during my actual training.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would mirror that. I just, you know, a lot of obscure details about why does the system work the way that it does. You know, it's like, I know that this is how I'm supposed to talk to flight service, but why does it work this way? You know, or how do you figure out that you're going to call Green Bay radio versus Princeton radio versus Chicago radio? It's not Chicago. I forget which suburb it is where the flight service station is down there. But, you know, why is it that, how do you figure that out? You know, how do you look at the RCO, for example, will not tell you which FSS it is that you're talking to. Stuff like that.
And that's the kind of stuff that I still struggle with now. It's like I go and when I'm outside the SFRA, well, which, you know, frequency do I use to call them up? Because Potomac Approach has like, you know, 8 frequencies. So which one am I using? Like, you just don't know without flying in the area, or, you know, do you just call the main one and then get handed off somewhere? But it's, yeah, I mean, I end up having those same kind of questions.
So
I can answer that question for you if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Since IFR charts are very explicit about which one you should call. They have a little sort of, it's a funny line. The line around the box is like up and down, like a square wave that goes around this box, and it'll tell you what the frequency is and who you're going to be talking to for that part of the chart. It's not on the VFR charts, though.
Interesting.
So I'm sorry, I stomped on somebody.
No, that was me. I was going to ask you a question about that. So on your charts, it doesn't say when you're looking at an RCO, it doesn't tell you what flight service?
Correct.
That you're talking really, because that was one of the things that he got me on. Well, he didn't get me, but I was able to say, you know, this RCO is talking to this flight service. I mean, it has it in a little box, a little parentheses underneath the box. So at least I knew who I was going to talk to. I just didn't understand the whole process. So I was just curious that it doesn't show up on your charts like that.
Well, let me look. Maybe I'm just being confused again.
There's a possibility.
Pull one up, so I just grabbed Sky Vector. I guess it does. It says Grand Forks under it, or it says Princeton. I stand corrected.
Okay. I didn't want to get. I didn't want to like throw a wrench into it or anything, but it's just. It was like, wait, I just saw that. Why would it be different in my area and your area? And
yeah, they better be pretty much the same, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
You hope.
Mm-hmm.
This is a government agency we're talking about.
Unless you're a glider pilot trying to fly over a nuclear power facility.
Oh,
yeah, that's just, that was asinine.
What did I miss?
So glider, do you want me to tell the story?
Yeah, have at it.
Yeah.
So glider pilot, very experienced glider pilot, is out flying from his glider flying club, and he's on a fairly long trip. It was like a 500-mile circuit.
Was this in Virginia?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think so.
I've heard some parts about it. All
right. Yeah, and he's trying to get back to base, to his home base, and he's trying to get lift, and he sees a nuclear power plant, and power plants are a great source of lift if you're a glider pilot. I'm not, but this is what I've since learned. And so he's orbiting over this nuclear power plant, just climbing, gaining altitude, you know, kind of slowly, but eking out as much as he can to get enough altitude to make it all the way back to home. And somebody there went nonlinear and was afraid that this was some sort of terrorist attack. And because, you know, a glider, an 800-pound glider is going to do a lot of damage to a nuclear power plant.
Certainly.
Yeah. And so they
scrambled the jets.
No, they didn't. They went to the local FBO at the nearest field and said, you got to get him on the radio and you've got to order him to land. Okay, well, there's several problems with this.
Yeah.
One, it's a glider, yeah. Right? So there's no onboard power capability to generate power, so you leave the radio off unless you're going to talk to somebody. So he wasn't talking to anybody. He didn't have anything on the radio. The radio was off, so no one was talking to him. And two, you cannot order somebody to land. I mean, the local police department, which is who the sheriff's department, I think it was, that got involved, has no authority to order an aircraft to land. They can try. but they're not in a position to do anything about that. They don't. That's out of their jurisdiction. And eventually he flipped over to that frequency because he was thinking about landing there. And he heard the tail end of something about that glider. And he came on and said, "Hey, hey, I'm a glider. I'm over here." I heard somebody talking, and they said, "Yeah, you're supposed to come in and land." And he's like, "Well, okay, let me figure it out." And he's like, "All right, I'll come in." And then he changed his mind. He was going to fly someplace else. He's like, "No, I'm not gonna go there." And eventually, he landed at this little airport, and something like a dozen squad cars were following him down the runway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's going to take off again,
yeah, right,
from his glider. And cuffed him and threw him in the clink for a day, yeah. And charged.
Because he was
the
flying.
Charge. It was some bogus charge that they filed against him.
Well, they said you're flying over a no-fly zone. He's like, yes. No. Wait a minute. Look at my charts. This is not a no-fly zone. There's nothing on my chart that says you can't fly here. I go by what the FAA says when I'm in an airplane. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. And he was legally doing nothing wrong. It was just a case of law enforcement not having a clue.
He had his day in court.
Plant that called the same sheriff's department to report a helicopter acting suspiciously when the helicopter was there full of people, employees of the nuclear power plant, doing a survey from the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he had his day in court. The AOP, I think he pays for that AOPA legal assistance that's available. They took care of the situation. Well, they said that they would drop the charges if he agreed not to sue the sheriff's office.
Right.
And reluctantly,
sue the sheriff, huh?
Reluctantly, he said yes. So that was pretty much the end of story. But it's made huge headlines on AOPA for quite a while.
Yeah, now that I hear it, I remember hearing some stuff about it, but I never read the full story on it.
That's pretty much the gist of it. If you go look up glider on AOPA, you'll run into that story all over the place.
That's just crazy.
I think it's in the AIM. It's either in the AIM or the FARs that says not to loiter above power generating facilities.
So, speaking...
Is that really loitering?
No.
In a glider, that's all you're doing, isn't it? You ain't got much other choice than to loiter. I'm going to get out my sectional here and see if I can find Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant. I don't know if it's on this sectional. It's not far away. It should be.
Don't you all have like four flight?
Four what?
Oh, that's right. You're the.
Is that a golfing program?
The nuke up here is not even mentioned. The nuke. There's one that says plant on the chart, but it doesn't say like what kind. It's just a visual navigation reference. It's not a warning. Stay away from this nuclear power plant. It just says plant.
Yeah. Hang on, let me look up the one in Dover real quick. I've flown by that a couple times. It just says power plant, and then it also says cooling tower and stacks as an obstruction. That's 526 feet. So that's all we got in the one. I take it back. It's in Jersey. So right on the Delaware Bay. So that's all I see here.
And doesn't say anything to stay away. Do not fly over.
No.
No. Of course not.
No, just your normal obstruct, tower or whatnot. So... yeah, I don't see anything crazy there, but that's just crazy. Anyways,
moving right along, right?
Yeah, moving along. What have the rest of you been up to?
Well, I've been doing some flying since the last time we've talked. I've got in, I know of at least three flights, maybe four. Went on a flight, this was early December, actually. I contacted a couple buddies that I used to work with at IBM, and one of them met me over at Deer Valley and jumped in the Archer with me, and then we flew over to Williams Gateway Airport, that's IWA, and picked up my other buddy, and then we went down to Marana for breakfast. The fun thing about this particular type of flight is that I take off from Deer Valley, and then I overfly Scottsdale Airport, which is about 10 nautical miles away. It's more than that, actually. You're there in like just a couple minutes. And then from there you overfly Falcon Field and then land at Williams Gateway. And Falcon Field and Williams Gateway, their airspaces almost touch. There's probably a half mile in between, maybe less. So it's a lot of fun doing the radio work. It's one of my favorite things while I'm flying is the radio work. So it's a lot of fun getting everything all tuned in and, you know, changing frequencies. And then you got to get ATIS and then you got to get cleared to land, et cetera, et cetera. So this whole flight from Deer Valley to Williams Gateway is probably about, 15, maybe 17 minutes. And you're passing over two other airports and landing at the third and getting ATIS and all that. So it's challenging and fun all at the same time. So then we go down to Marana, had breakfast. That was a lot of fun. Get ready to take off. And as we're taxiing, I'm like going, man, it's hard to turn. It feels like the front wheel is trying to come off the hub. So I stop and I told my buddy Matt, I said, hey, would you jump out and take a look and see if the front tire is low? And he jumped out and looked, and sure enough, it was really low. So I had to limp it over in front of the FBO, and I got him to got a truck to come over and air it up for me. Gave the guy a little tip, and off we were back Williams Gateway to drop him off. So that was a lot of fun. Another first time small airplane flyer. So he'd never been in a small airplane. He's like, you know, what happens when you do this? What happens when you do that? You know, so we had a lot of fun. I had him fly the majority of the leg, so he got a chance to get his hands on the controls, which is always the point whenever I get someone new on there. I have them try and do most of the flying for me.
Wow, that's one hell of an autopilot.
Yeah, I know, huh? I got a ton of takeoff and landings and not so much actual flying time. So, but hey, the more people I can put in the right seat, the better I see it, the way I see it.
Hey, you got more than me.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that. I posted something that earlier or last year sometime. What was it? Okay, so last year, yeah, a whole 23 and a half hours total. But I took up 11 non-pilots for their first flight in a small plane. So I was proud of that, even though I didn't give very much time actual flying. But
that's cool.
See if I can break that record next year. Three non-pilots?
No, 3 hours.
Oh, 3 hours? Ouch.
I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, yeah. you were rocking out. You were still doing the IFR last year, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So almost, well, maybe a fourth of my hours last year were the IFR training.
Mm-hmm. Got a bunch.
And then a few hours doing the aero, getting that checkout taken care of.
Cool. See, and then at the end of December, December 29th, so this was kind of funny. I was looking on Craigslist for something, I don't know what, and of course while I'm on there I always type in airplane or flying or something. And anyways, I see a flight instructor and he's posting for, you know, flight instruction. I forget how much an hour, didn't really care, I wasn't looking at that. But he said he had a Cessna 172P for $105 an hour wet. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm always looking for a cheap airplane to fly, because you guys remember that Cessna 172P that I was flying for $95 an hour wet?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that went away.
That one went away, right. So that one went away because Lucas got a job flying cargo in Alaska somewhere. So he gave his plane over to Glendale Flyers, and so they're renting it out, but for $130 an hour. Well, that's no longer a deal. So anyways, I contact him and we talk back and forth, and I was like, hey, you know, I don't need instruction, but I'd love to maybe rent the airplane. Is it for sale, or is it for rent, or do you just use it for instruction? He goes, no, I can check you out in it. So I was like, cool. I'm like, where's it at? He's like, oh, it's at Glendale. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, well, you know, where's the hangar? And he tells me, and I'm like, all right, I'll meet you there on, I don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday. So anyways, I get over there and I meet him, and he takes me over to the hangar. It's that same exact Cessna 172P.
Oh, it's the same airframe, same tail number?
No, I mean, it's the exact same plane. So
wow.
So I was like, oh, well, I get out. I go, well, I've already been checked out in this plane. He goes, huh? I go, yeah, this is Lucas's plane. I was checked out in it, and I said, let me see. And I pull out my logbook. I go, June. So I go, I go, what's going on? I thought the Glendale Flyers has it. He goes, well, they do still, sort of. He said he used to be an instructor for Glendale Flyers, but, you know, they were bouncing checks to him. Oh. And he goes, and I'm not even so sure that Lucas is getting all of his money for the amount of hours that they're putting on the plane. So I contacted Lucas. Lucas told me that, hey, you know, if you want to rent the plane out yourself and instruct in it privately, you can. you know, here's what I'm charging, charge what you want. So he's charging $105, which is still a really good rate for a 172P wet. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
So, you know, he's like, well, you're here, I'm here, you want to go flying? I'm like, yeah, let's go do something. He's like, well, you know, what do you want to practice? He goes, how about spins? I'm like, yes, let's go do spins. I've never done spins yet. Let's go. He's like, all right. Well, the tanks were full, so we have to go burn some fuel off to get utility.
Oh, darn it.
The horror.
Oh, so anyways.
I hate you. Have I said that?
We went and did four touch and goes, you know, to burn some fuel off and then headed out into the southern practice area beyond South Mountain a little bit. And so we go out there and he's like, all right, I'll do the first one. We'll do the next one together, and then you do one. I'm like, all right. So he's like, well, the thing about the 172 is they don't really want to spin. You have to force them into a spin. I'm like, okay. So he's showing me. So he, you know, brings the nose up. It's stalling, and then it breaks. And you just follow the brake whichever way it wants to go. Most of the time it's going to break over to the left. So it starts breaking over the left, and he cranks over the ailerons to the left, the yoke, and hits that rudder, and we kind of, you know, fall over and just start spinning to the ground. When he does that, I just grab a hold of the dash and the roof of the plane, and I'm holding on, looking straight down, just spinning. Ah! You know, I wasn't yelling or anything, but it was a little freaky at first, right? Yeah, I was like, this is the coolest roller coaster ever. But we did like three full spins, and then he goes, then all you got to do really, honestly, is just let go of everything, and it will come out all by itself. But the right way to do it, of course, you know, you're going to – as soon as you stall like that, you know, you pull the power to idle, it's doing its stall. And when you're spinning – he actually don't let you get out of the spin until you hear the stall horn. Then you actually know the wings are stalled when you're spinning. So the stall horn's coming on, neutralize the aileron, opposite rudder, boom, it snaps right out of it, pull back, and you get about, I don't know, it felt like 2.5 G's or so, and climb right back out of it. And while you're climbing out using that airspeed, give it the gas again and get back up to altitude so you can get your next one in. So then we did our next one together, and then I did the third one by myself. Then I did the fourth one by myself. I was like, oh, that was a lot of fun. I had a blast doing it. I thought I was going to be a little freaked out by it, but I like roller coasters and everything, so I had a great time doing it. And so we're starting to head back, and I was like, oh, let's do one more, and I'll take a video of it. You do it, and I'll just take a video with my camera. And he's like, oh, okay. So we start to turn around, and about that moment, my stomach's like going, nah, I don't think you're going to do another one.
You're done.
Yeah, you're done. I was like, oh, never mind. Let's just head back. I don't think I could stand one more. So I held it together. No throw up this time. But
No cheesesteak before the flight?
No. I kept it all inside, and I think my limit is four spins and a 172. Mr. Tupper, if you're ever listening, yeah. And I ever get picked for an acro camp thing, I'll bring my own air sick bags. I think I know what my limit is. But if you haven't did spins yet, go ask your instructor to go do it. It's in my, you know, my opinion, it's a lot of fun. Scary, but a lot of fun.
I wonder how the controllers in the SFRA would feel about seeing a plane just spiraling to the ground.
They don't. They just see it losing altitude.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can do stalls and other pattern work. I think you can do it, but it'd just be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, though. I'm jealous.
That was a good time. And then another big thing that happened was a couple weeks ago, January 10th, the second Thursday of every month, Qatar Aviation at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport puts on a luncheon, a barbecue / you know, cookout or whatever on the premises. And it's a fly-in or a drive-in. So I'm like, yeah, I'm down. So me and my buddy Franz got in the Archer and took off and went over to Sky Harbor Airport, a Class Bravo airport, to land and have a lunch at Qatar. And that was a blast. Had no idea on exactly the specific procedures for landing at such a large airport, but I figure, you know, they're going to walk me through it, right? So I tell, we take off from Deer Valley. I tell them I'm going south, so they know I'm going to go through the Bravo. They gave me a frequency change before I was making my crosswind turn, and I was still over top of the runway.
Wow.
So that was nice. It gave me a few minutes extra time to get all situated because I got to get ATIS and whatnot. And their ATIS is horrible. It's that robot voice.
It's the digital ATIS. Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that one.
Oh, it's horrid. It doesn't come through real clear, in my opinion. And on top of that, there's a ton of runways and taxiways, so it takes forever to get through. So anyways, I get ATIS, and I call up Phoenix Approach. You know, Phoenix Approach, Archer 354, Mike Alpha, just departed Deer Valley, en route to land at Qatar, full stop. We've got whatever it was, India. And so they gave me a squawk code, you know, and cleared me through the Class Bravo. They said, "Are you familiar with the Class Bravo?" I said, "Yes, I am." All right, you're cleared through the West Transition at 4,500. All right, we're cleared. So that means you're, you know, at Phoenix, the Class Bravo transition. There's an east or a west. So, and they are over the ends of the runway. I've talked about this before. So I'm over the tops of the runway or the ends of the runway on the west side. And then they hand me off to the south side approach. And so I'm talking to south. And they said, all right, 4 Mike Alpha, you are cleared to land 7 right. That's the 7 right would be the southernmost runway, which would be right next to where Qatar is. So as soon as I land and taxi off the taxiway, I'd be facing Qatar. So that's cool. So I'm at 4,500 feet, cleared to land 7 right. Are you going to be able to make that? I was like, yeah, I'll be able to make it. So I'm like over top of the runway at 4,500 feet on the one I'm supposed to land at. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. He's like, all right, cleared to land 7 right, contact tower. So I contact tower, you know, Phoenix Tower, 4 Mike Alpha with you for 7 right. Yep, 7 right, cleared to land. Make sure and don't overshoot. Okay. So I cut the power, get the flaps in, make my turn. He cleared me for a right 270. So he just wanted me to, you know, basically do a big U-turn and land.
Teardrop onto the end of the runway.
Yeah, not actually a U-turn because I was still on over top of the runway at that point. But I being a little nervous, I extended that downwind just, you know, probably a mile more than I needed to actually. After it was all said and done, I was like, it seemed like I was coming in on final forever. And I certainly didn't need to. I could have just made it more like a short approach. And so hoping to do that next time, now that I know what more the procedure is. And plopped it right down on top of the numbers and good landing, turned off, contacted ground, went over to Qatar, went inside. There's like nobody there. And I look on my phone on Twitter and my buddy goes, hey, it was canceled. We're going home. Oh, you're kidding me.
Two questions. Did you need Progressive Taxi, and what did the fees set you back?
So I didn't need Progressive Taxi because as soon as I exited the runway, I was looking at Qatar. So I was right from the taxiway Bravo or Charlie. I forget what it is. I think it's Charlie, right to their apron. So that was easy. And then Qatar waives all the fees for this event. So it didn't cost me anything.
Oh, that's nice. Event.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, man. So I went up to the counter. I was like, I just heard you guys had canceled the cookout. A friend of mine told me I saw. He was smart enough to actually call Qatar on the radio while they were in flight, and they told him. I don't know if that would have detracted me at all. I still wanted to land there. But no charge. They didn't charge me anything, so I was thrilled. I hope to maybe do it again this next Thursday that's coming up. So now taking off is a different thing. So we get ready to take off, and I call up ground, you know, after getting ATIS for 6 minutes. I call up ground and tell them that I'm ready to go. And they're like, have you contacted clearance delivery? No. Why would I do that?
Oh, you forgot about that part.
What would be their number? So I contact clearance delivery, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying to them. So I give them the same spiel that I say to ground, you know. You know, Archer 4.
That's exactly right.
You know, I'm at Cutter. I'm ready to taxi to active. I've got Bravo, yada, yada, yada. So they're like, okay. So they basically are putting you in the system, getting you sequenced in with all the rest of the stuff so ground can handle you. So I do that, and then I get back to ground, and I just am redundant again, telling that, you know, where I'm at and where I want to go, yada, yada, yada. And now I'm in the system, so they clear me to taxi down. And this time, since then, they've changed runways, so now I'm taking off the opposite direction that I land. You know what was funny is that when I was landing, and you guys probably saw the pictures, I was landing on 7 right, and on 7 left, there was 8 or 9 jets lined up getting ready to take off, and I didn't see a single one of them when I was landing.
Yeah.
None of them. I was focused on those numbers on 7 right. You know, a UFO could have been, you know, with me on off my wing. I would have not known the difference.
Because you don't want to land long on an 8,000-foot runway.
No. No. But anyways, that was a blast. I really look forward to doing it again, take advantage of all the waived ramp fees, etc. So I'll do that all day long if they let me. And I got to, you know, shout out to Phoenix ATC. You guys are just awesome. No one's acting annoyed that I'm putting my little plane with the little bitty fan in front of it and wasting your time or anything like that. They were most gracious and didn't have any kind of attitude whatsoever. So
yeah, that's great.
That's cool.
Anyways, other than that, I've been practicing some for an FAA knowledge test myself, and not for the instrument yet.
What are you going to do? A commercial?
I'm doing the flight ground instructor.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
I am I want to knock that out and then do my instrument. I am just kind of got started in it. I'm only, I don't know, maybe 80 or 90 pages into the FLIME manual or knowledge, or what do you call it, the questions and answers that are in here. But you know, it's kind of funny. It's so much more in depth than, I mean, because they say that after taking your typical private pilot exam, you should be able to go and take this and still just pass it, because you know you still just need a 70. But yeah, the instructor portion of it, it's just, there's a whole lot more, and it seems to be a little bit more in-depth versions of these questions and more of them. But so we'll see what that test looks like here in the future. I mean, a lot of it's just really redundant of what we've already learned, so it's a good refresher, you know, nonetheless. But anyways, that's been fun.
Cool.
Mr. Brad, how about your flying?
Well, I was going to ask if John wanted to go next.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have too much. I still have not been flying since July. Kind of sucks. I've been thinking about I'm due for BFR now, actually this month. So I have until tomorrow to do it, but that's not going to happen.
I can't believe it's already up. But then again, I guess, you know, September will be mine.
Yeah. So I'm due, but I'm going to be going up with a friend of mine's instructor at some point. I haven't really scheduled any time yet due to the wedding coming up and the 60-day currency the club requires. I don't think that now, about 45 days before the wedding, is the right time to try to fit in a BFR and have to do all the studying that I need to do for it, especially since I haven't flown since July. I think I'm going to wait a little bit. I might even have to wait until after the wedding to get up again, just because I don't think I'm going to have the time to put the studying in that I need to feel comfortable with it. So that's kind of where I'm at. It sucks. I want to go flying, especially after meeting with some people on Sunday and talking with some airplane owners and all the crazy stuff they get to do. So I'm itching to get back up, but it's just, I don't think it's going to happen until at least probably a month and a half from now. So that's been where I'm at. Sunday, though, I did get to go to the AirPigs meetup. He had a meetup at the Smithsonian in D.C. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. A bunch of bacon lovers went down there, and I got to go on Sunday and meet up with Mart, who runs AirPigs. Got to see David Vanderhoof from Airplane Geeks. And a bunch of other people that, you know, from all around, which was really cool. Got down there for breakfast with them, and then we went to the museum, kind of toured around, took a lot of pictures, and you know, chatted about a bunch of stuff. So it was really cool, really nice to see everybody. It's also kind of nice to play around with my new toy. So I finally bit the bullet and also got approval from the significant other to get a camera. So I have one. I am ready to go for Oshkosh.
You already got it?
Dude, I get the 60D.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my daughter would be so jealous. She's been trying to hit me up since before Christmas for a 60D.
Dude, I have no idea how to use this thing.
It's awesome. A good friend of mine has the 7D, which is the...
Oh, yeah.
That's what I took to Oshkosh last year, was the 7D.
That's an amazing camera, too. But you have to know what you're doing with that one.
Of course I didn't.
But the 60, I actually want to get the 60 myself. So you have to play around with it and give me some feedback.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
But who of us is going to be at Oshkosh this year, 2013?
Me. I will.
Probably definitely. Not me.
I can't commit yet. As much as I want to. And even the thing about
guys,
it
you're
is,
killing me.
I know.
I drive there for you.
I know. Well, you're my camping supply.
If you don't go, I'm just flying.
Yeah. I don't know. I really, you know, it's not a matter of a want. It's, you know, I don't know. I'm like probably like 60%. We'll see about on the next episode, see if I'm closer. I haven't mentioned it to the wife. I don't know if she's under the assumption that it just is yet, because it's only been 2 years so far, but we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, mine is.
You know.
She knows. She agreed. I made sure she agreed.
It's in the prenups.
It's a prenup, exactly.
I've already got the plane checked out, reserved.
So. Oh, nice. Nice job.
Nice. I can't afford that much.
This time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
If you go this year, I will push my percentage up right now to 75% if you're already going to go.
I'm working on it. Right. I've got some stuff in the works, but we'll see.
I know.
If you go, I'm 100%.
I know at least three or four people from here in Phoenix now that I am kind of friends with that are going. So, and they've already got, I've got people that, oh, I've already got my plane tickets. I've already rented a house, yada, yada, yada. So, way to go.
House. That's what we need.
I know, yeah. Huh? You know, I love being on site the whole time at the camp. It's just, you're never out of the mix. You know how I am. You know, I went up there and found a party at the with the South Africans last year.
Yeah, I mean I agree, but because now I'm kind of working the show a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It's I love the camping and I love being there, but at the same time, reliable power.
Yeah,
is important, especially for an iMac. So
you just need to rent one of those big Winnebagos.
Seriously, I've thought about. It's just not cost effective enough yet. It's way cheaper just to get a hotel or a house. I think even.
Yeah, even splitting that between like three people, I bet you still wouldn't be quite.
Yeah.
Value,
because you still have to drive it up from like Milwaukee or Chicago or something, you know. So it's. I don't know. I mean, I have no set lodging plans yet.
I was thinking about asking Larry to I talked to him last year about this. You know how he gets that trailer, the pop-up camper? He says, yeah, there's another one where I get this one from. There's always two. And I was trying to think about seeing if I get my whole family to go. You know, Larry said he would you know, bring the other grab the other trailer and bring it over for me, which would be fantastic. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would need either a trailer or a hotel room to get Lindsay to come up with me. So she made that pretty clear.
And that still doesn't solve the power issue, because now you need, you know, a generator. So if you have a big RV with a generator, there you go.
But at the same time, if you're not in 24-hour generator area,
mm-hmm.
you're cut off at what, 10 o'clock? Mm-hmm. And that's when we're primarily doing work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult. But, you know, we'll work it out. But I'm definitely going. I can't wait. I'm already planning on it. Anyways, I'm going to have to go ahead and get to bed. It's 11 o'clock here, and I've got a long day tomorrow.
All right. Our, Brad, have you went?
I haven't. I've been doing a fair, well, not a terribly huge amount of flying. It's a little rough in the wintertime. I had a flight to Green Bay with some buddies of mine to catch a Packer game at Lambeau. And I wanted to make sure that I was IFR proficient. I was current, but I wanted to make sure I was proficient before that. And I grabbed an instructor and went up and did some flying. And it was about middle of December. It was a cool day probably in the 20s or so. And we launched up and it was actual. And we started to pick up a little bit of ice. And that was a really enlightening experience. I'd never encountered ice before. There was no air met for icing conditions. But we were, obviously it was below the freezing point and we were in actual. And we picked up a little bit and started to pay attention, pay more attention and try to avoid it. And we managed all right. Came in, shot a bunch of approaches. That was no problem. Actually felt really good about how I flew the aircraft. Came in and landed and took a look at the airplane afterwards. I put the airplane in the hangar. My CFII headed out to where he had to go to. And I was putting the plane away and did a very detailed walk around of it. And, you know, had the usual, what you would expect for icing. You know, there was some ice on the prop. Not very much. There was ice on the leading edges of the wings, including completely covering the stall indicator.
Wow.
So the stall indicator was non-functional, which would not have occurred to me. The vents were frozen over, so there was no way to clear the cabin. To get clear air in the cabin, other than opening the little window on the side of the aero, there wasn't anything on the gear, which was good. There wasn't anything on the gear wells, which would have been a problem if the gear had been frozen into the up position. There was ice on the antennas. Luckily, we didn't lose any. Ice on the vents on the air intakes for the engine cowling. There's ice on the windscreen. We ended up doing a no flap landing because we knew we had ice. We had accumulated some amount of ice, so we did a no flap landing at a fairly high speed. And of course, it's December in Minnesota, so the runways have a fair amount of ice on the surface. So we're landing on a 3,500 foot runway at, you know, on short final, we're doing 90 knots with no flaps. So we had to make, you know, it was a very high speed landing on a slippery, relatively short runway. And all of this stuff is kind of accumulating in my head. And I'm starting to go, yeah, I understand why you don't really want to mess with this. You know, if the atmospheric conditions had been a little bit different, we had outs. We had a 1,000-foot ceiling below us, so we could have gotten out of it and been, you know, more or less okay. But if you don't have a really solid out that you can get to, either above it or below it, and if you're going to go above it, if you have enough fuel, or if it's below it, the visibility's got to be good enough that you can fly VFR to get somewhere where you can land. I can see where ice is going to quickly take away a lot of your options. Now, of course, by the time it came time to fly to Green Bay, which was the 23rd of December, I filed IFR and flew IFR, but we had absolutely no IMC. So that's just kind of how that goes. But, you know, all of the stuff that the FAA says about icing and they say that stuff for a reason. You know, it really is not something that you want to mess with. It's something that you want to avoid as best you can. And that lesson, you know, I got to learn not the hard way. And I'd like to think that I've gotten my taste and feel fortunate that it worked out fine. And I will strive to avoid it in the future. So that was kind of a short synopsis of a lot of my flying activity.
Sounds like it was hairy.
It was safe. The plane was stable. Everything was controlled. We weren't accruing ice at any kind of a rapid rate. We were able to shoot our approaches, and we very carefully monitored the situation. We had flashlights, and we were looking at the wings and looking at the thermometer is one of the first places that you're going to see it because it sticks out the front of the plane and it's right up in the windscreen. Mm. So we're looking at the thermometer a lot, and then we notice it's starting to accumulate there, and we're watching the wings and keeping a very sharp eye on it. If I had been in the plane by myself, I would have I probably would have declared, right? At least I would have told ATC that I was accumulating ice and requested an immediate approach back into the departing airport. But I had someone with me who had some experience with ice, both in known ice certified aircraft and non-certified aircraft. And so I felt like, and we had a good out below us. So I felt like we were in not a bad stage. We were very carefully monitoring it. And other than the no flaps landing at a fairly good clip and the just being very ginger in the pattern, flew a nice wide pattern, made nice shallow turns to keep the load factor down. We really didn't have to change all that much. The instrument work was the same, mm-hmm. regardless of the conditions. It was just he was a lot busier than a CFII would normally be on a flight like that.
So those conditions were like that all the way to the ground?
No, it was like that to about 1,000 feet.
Okay,
and you start.
So by the time you hit, by the time you hit below 1,000 feet, then you started to see the melting.
No, it was still below 1,000 feet, but we were out of we couldn't accumulate anymore. We were out of visible moisture at that point.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it was shedding at all, but
no. So some of it sublimated. We were above the layer for a fair chunk of time, and so I had the hood on to get some simulated time, and some of it sublimated off while we were above. Not a huge amount. It was rime ice that we picked up, and there wasn't enough to form horns or anything like that. I've got some pictures of it, of the spinner and the leading edges of the wings and the tail and that kind of stuff. But it was just enough to say I actually wasn't all that concerned at the time because the rate of accumulation was so low. It was after I got on the ground and started to really go over the airplane and started to discover things like, hey, I don't have a stall horn, that I went, okay, this is just not anything that I want to mess around with. There's just too many cases of people getting in over their heads in that kind of weather, and you just don't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
There's no way to know if you're going to get clear ice or rime ice or, some of the stuff you can kind of figure out if you're going to get super cool large drops, mm-hmm. and things like that. But there's no great way to tell. You can ahead of time on the ground what you're going to get up in the air. There are pyreps. You'll get pyreps a lot of the times. The airlines will file, but the airlines are grading on a curve. So they're going to say, this is light rime, but light rime to a 737 that's got a 3,000 foot per minute climb rate, different from what you're going to accrue in a 180 horsepower Archer.
Right.
In the clouds longer, and it's going to have a much bigger impact, and you have no way to get it off. So it was a lot of... So pyreps aren't all that helpful, and the lack of pyreps doesn't mean that the weather is good. It could be that there's really bad icing condition. Everybody else is smart enough to stay on the ground. So you don't want to be the one guy that punches up and it's like, oh yeah, severe.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very educational in a very different dimension of flying than I'd ever worked with. I'd always kind of wanted to start to learn more about what icing is, and I think every instrument pilot is a little bit curious about it and wants to understand it. And you know, now I know enough to really believe the adage that you just avoid it. You know, minimize your exposure to whatever adverse weather conditions you're going to be in, whether it's icing or whether it's convective or wind shear or whatever it is. Just, you know, if you have a plan B, try to use it.
You didn't by chance give a pie rep, did you?
We did. We formed ATC that we were picking up light ice, and that immediately goes out. Even if you don't have to call flight service, or watch to give a pie rep, you can give it directly through ATC. And since we were IFR and we were always in Bravo airspace, we were on with Minneapolis approach almost the entire time. So we just told them what we were picking up and where the bases and tops were.
Ah, very good.
They always like to know that.
Yeah, all pilots are appreciative of that extra information.
Yeah, and whenever I take off, or actually in particular, whenever I'm landing at a towered field, the tower is always asking, what are the tops, what are the bases? Because they can put it into the ATIS and they can inform other pilots, you know, hey, so-and-so just came in and reported bases at 1800 or 650 or whatever those conditions were, so that the people that are on the ground that are about to take off know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
It was good stuff. Other than that, I haven't flown since December, so I've got to get up and shoot some approaches. I was going to go last night, and I was feeling a little bit fatigued, and then I was going to go tonight, but we're here, and finally, you know, wanted to avail ourselves of the chance to all get together and chat.
Yes, thank you.
We've had a good spate of weather lately, where we've had about 1,500 foot overcast with no air mat for icing. I've been working on my weather analysis, and figuring out where the tops are has been kind of fun, and trying to learn what the cloud profile looks like, what that's going to mean in terms of likely icing conditions. And so I've been trying to focus in on that. We had a listener that asked a question about how to do weather analysis for instrument pilots. And when we've got a little bit more time, I could probably spend some time talking about that.
Good idea. Yeah. Keep that on the back burner. Make a note of that. And we'll bring that up maybe in the next episode. Speaking of flying, I plan on flying. I've got the plane scheduled for Saturday. I'm going to fly down to, Coolidge Airport, P08. And I spent a little bit of time going in and out of Coolidge during my training. That was one of the airports we hit. It's an untowered airport. But the first Saturday of every month, there's a pancake breakfast fly-in that happens there. I think the pancake breakfast is put on by the Lions Club, if I'm not mistaken. And it's pretty cool. I haven't ever made it down to this yet. I don't know why. I've been recently seeing some really cool videos of other people that was down there, and there seems to be at least a good, you know, I don't know, 30 to 50 airplanes show up, and everything from P-51 Mustangs to Huey helicopters to you name it. It just seems like there's a little bit of everything going on there. And now that I got my camera, you know, I land, get out of the airplane, walk down towards the middle of the runway that everybody's landing on, and just get some great photos of planes going in. No stress there for the pilots coming in to land when you got a half a dozen photographers standing on the side of the runway taking your picture as you come in.
So you're the middle of the runway, that would be a bit of a problem.
Well, lengthwise, not in it, on it, but off to the side. But there's always a bunch of photographers always hanging out there. There's so many good photo opportunities because, you know, It's an untowered airport, and once you're there, you can just walk around wherever you want, which is nice. So we'll see how that goes.
And we unintentionally landed at a fly-in, and the departure, it was stressful because I knew everybody was watching. It was a very short runway, and I was flying IFR, so all the VFR pilots were like, "Ooh, what's he going to do when he gets up to those clouds and all that kind of stuff?" And you're just like, "Ugh, this is not what I need right now."
That's like someday I swear I'm going to go up to Payson, where I've been, a half a dozen times, but you can fly into Payson and actually camp overnight with your airplane. And I'm going to bring up a whole bunch of scoring cards, 1 through 10, and sit there and sit on the runway and judge landings, sit next to the runway in a lounge chair and just put up my card for every landing. So they like that. That was a 6 because you bounced it twice. Sorry.
Bounce it twice should be a lot lower than a 6.
Yeah. Anywho, I think we've pretty much used up all the time we probably should for this episode. I think we should call it a wrap.
Sounds good. I can go study now.
Ah, yes. Back to the books for Mark.
Yep.
Yeah. Schedule that check ride.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Yeah. Cool. I can't wait to hear about that. When do you think that is again?
Honestly, is with the studying I have to do, I think I'll probably go up a couple more times if I can get out this weekend. I'll probably go for a couple 3 hours go do high and low air work.
Mm-hmm.
Progressively, I would like to say early next week I would take the stage check ride with the DPE.
Mm.
And if he's happy, then within the next couple of weeks.
So middle of February or so, maybe the third week, huh?
Yeah, at the latest, just because I wanted to be done by the end of January, but between weather and work and everything else. But
yeah.
It's been severe clear here lately and
fantastic.
Perfect
yeah.
weather to fly. So
yeah, take advantage of it.
Absolutely. I want to get done. There are some things that I want to go do that I just can't, I can't wait till I'm legally allowed to go do that and throw my kids in the plane and
yeah.
go. And
that's a blast.
There's this guy down in Arizona that I keep threatening to come down and see,
Yeah. Yeah. We'll figure out a halfway meeting place somewhere along the way. I know it's a long flight for both of us, but
exactly. But that would be fun to do.
Not so bad to meet up somewhere in the middle, I bet.
Yeah.
You know what we need to do is we need to go hit up Mike Daniels in Vegas.
That would be cool.
Because I bet you that's about probably not quite equal for both of us, I guess. But it's
my daughter has a soccer tournament in Vegas, actually in Henderson, in the Valentine's Day weekend.
Oh.
And I really wanted to be done by that time. That way, maybe unfortunately, it's the same price if I wanted to fly commercial, whether I take the Archer or whatever else I could get. It's still not cheap. But
no. It's a lot more expensive for me to fly the Archer versus take the commercial because my flights are only like $59.
Well, during that weekend, which is bad, it happens to be a President's Weekend and Valentine's, so there's no deals.
Yeah.
Usually it's like the $59 or $89 through Southwest, and it's like $600 for the two of us round trip. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, well, for that price, I could fly myself.
Yeah. Well, matter of fact, I just was in Vegas, not this week, past weekend, but the weekend before last, but we drove up. It was supposed to be a fly-up, me and three of my friends, but after I figured out, well, to do this legally, I'm going to have to take off with this amount of fuel, which means we're only going to get to Kingman, and I'm going to have to stop and put some fuel in and then take back off again. They're like, yeah, forget that. We'll just drive. So anyways, let's finish this up. How about some shout-outs? Anyone got any shout-outs?
I do. I was going to give a shout-out to the Excelsior Springs Airport outside of Kansas City. It's a 3 Echo X-Ray. They are a little airfield that Aiden and I stopped in on the way back from Arkansas four months ago or so, and they were in a big effort to try to kind of turn the airport around. It was an aging field, and they were really trying to revitalize it. And all of a sudden, it sounds like the field is threatened with closure by some of the folks at the city of Excelsior Springs. Mm. And although the likely vote will have been cast by the city by the time this episode hits the airwaves, as it were, just hoping, pulling for them, and hoping that they can convince everybody to keep the field open.
Yeah, we need more of those small airports to stay alive.
Absolutely.
Field too, right next to a golf course. You can walk from the field. It's just.
I remember you talking about a flight there, and you said that was really nice.
Yeah, I was really disappointed to hear that there are some folks there that just don't want to keep it around.
Yeah, that's a shame. I got a quick shout out just over to Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport and Qatar Aviation. Fantastic job. Look forward to visiting you again as often as I can. Unfortunately, second Thursday of each month means that I'd have to take off specific time from work to do it. But I don't know of any better reason than to take off work than to fly into a Class Bravo airport anyways. So it's a good enough excuse for me, plus, you know, chasing the free food. So whatever it takes. And other than that, what's that?
As I say, I do have one.
Yep.
John actually brought it up, and I'll, since he's not here with us, I'll go ahead and I'll say it. Congratulations to my friend Steve Tupper. 7 years with Airspeed Online, and he has accomplished more than most of us can dream of from a podcaster's perspective and from a pilot's perspective.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Steve. Great job on the first 7, and hope you keep doing it for another 20. I'll follow you. That's sure.
Yep.
So just a big shout out to Steve.
Inspiration to all of us podcasters on trying to chase that free ride in cool planes.
Absolutely.
He's got that down to a science. All right, I think we call that a wrap. That's episode 27 in the can.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head.com.
No, not. See, this is what happens when you don't fly. You forget how to use your stuff.
Thank you.
It's been a whoa, weather looks fun. I got radar turned on. Oh, there's a couple storms headed right for me.
Yay.
Oh, wow. It's a line of... Oh, that's going to be fun.
You're not out in your car again, are you?
No. My car is, I guess, safely in the garage. It's a little dinged up, but it's in the garage.
Oh, there's... Someone's coming home. You hear the dog?
What is a helicopter? Seriously, there's a helicopter like hovering above my house.
Go out and wave to him.
He's taunting you. I'm flying and you're not.
I know.
You have a green laser you can point at him? I will suggest it. But.
I actually went to an astronomer presentation, and the guy brought us outside to look up in the telescope, and he was talking about, he had a little laser with him, and he said, you could shine it at a plane and it wouldn't even be a problem. And I said, let's talk. It wouldn't be a problem for you if you don't mind going to jail.
Yeah.
Bambi Wham!